overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Many blessings to you.
And so with the mindfulness bell, we practice the art of stopping. And as we stop, we look within, and we become stewards of the energy that operates on the inside of life. If fear should arise, or an emotional surge of some sort, we embrace that fear, that surge of energy, with compassionate awareness. I saw this amazing documentary on Netflix called From Stress to Happiness. And it was all about a young man who was living in stress in Argentina, so much so that he was a mess. And his compassionate, loving wife found a holy man, a monk, to help her neurotic husband. And he offered his presence to him. The young man was crazy. He says, "My monkey mind is driving me crazy. I don't know what to do." And the monk said, "Embrace the monkey." And in a holy instant, the man went from being neurotic to finding a way to navigate his own neuroses. And so in this beautiful documentary, he said, "Observe that there is a peace that's always there. And when anxiety should arise, instead of reacting, you learn how to respond." And he said, when peace is discovered, it then begins to expand within your field of awareness. And it's not to say that anxiety won't show up, because it will. But the first thing the monk handed the young man was the capacity to respond in a peaceful way. As the documentary went on further, the monk showed him that when we operate from a compassionate heart, when we are loving, we are also moving out of a reactive place into a responsive, loving space. And then the third thing the monk shared with the young man who was neurotic was, in every moment, we get to meet the moment and trust that life has given us this moment so that we might either return to peace or find a way to bring compassionate awareness into that moment. And so a young man who was operating reactionarily in life, at the end of this sweet documentary, was able to sit in the moment and be with what is. The mindfulness bell, does the very same thing. It takes us back into the breath, into the moment. And one of the wisest things someone ever shared with me was that your future will evolve out of your quality involvement with the moment. And so all we ever really tend is the moment. And then we trust in life, this amazing gift that we've all been given. And by right of consciousness, we will demonstrate whatever it is. And sometimes they're painful experiences. My beloved Bert made his transition on July 8th, and I'm still somewhat grieving his loss. And I come here on Sunday mornings and see a teddy bear, and tears come to my eyes. And I realize those are tears of gratitude for a beautiful experience that I had for so many years. And it's still happening. The love is still there. They leave the best parts of them behind. They take the light with them and their warm fuzziness, but they leave that incredible love right there, right inside our own heart. And so we come here this Sunday morning to experience the web of connection. The connection with the peace, the connection with the love, and the connection to an awake awareness that says, all we ever experience is the moment. Could we embrace that moment and find a place of nurturing so that we might then offer that to the world? This month of December, we're exploring the idea of drinking from a river of light. A river that is everywhere, which means then the light is everywhere. And we come here on Sunday mornings to drink. Stay thirsty, said Rumi, because there's plenty of light and love to drink. So when you're ready to join me, you can open your eyes. And it's so lovely to see your beautiful faces. You know, this is a crazy time on the planet. Couple announcements, since I don't have beloved Jody up here doing announcements on Sunday. We have a new class starting in January. It's called The Awakened World. And it's going to be based on Llewellyn Von Lee, my Sufi teacher for many years. It's going to be on Zoom on Wednesday mornings, 10 to 11:30. And the whole premise is that it's not enough for you to simply awaken. The world needs to awaken. And we contagion the world by our awake awareness. And he said the imperative is to see with new eyes, to see with the eyes of oneness, no longer as the separate individual with conditions outside, but to see with the eyes of the presence, if you will, to see with the eyes of gratitude, to see with the eyes of an eternal spirit that was never born and never dies. And then when someone dies, you realize that you're not really crazy. They are still here. They're just not in their form. And so then you understand the admonition, die before you die. All you're dying to is the idea of you as separate from that. And when you know there is no you separate from that, well, then there is no death. And then there is this new order of being. It's a pattern that's repeated throughout history. There's an order. We were raised with it in the Judeo-Christian tradition. You're born in sin, and Jesus had to die for your sins. Then there's a chaos. That can't be true. We can't be born in sin. And Jesus didn't die for our sins. This divine presence loves us regardless. So then there is a reordering, a new way of looking at life, a new way of seeing things. And that's an endless process that never ends. So the new class, I wasn't ready to teach in 2006 when he wrote the book, but I'm ready to teach it now. It's largely from a shamanic perspective, and it recognizes that everything is sacred. And there's a difference. When you see the world as sacred, well, then you don't abuse the world. Then you bow to the world. You cherish the world. I saw on one of those crazy quotes, I think it was on Facebook, we got it all wrong, worshiping something that was invisible outside ourselves, that would judge us if we're bad and praise us if we're good, when we have nature all around us, which is the living expression of the one, and we don't consider it sacred. So what if it's about learning to see life in a whole new way? So that's what this new class is going to be about. There's a sign-up sheet in the other room. We also have our Wednesday night live, where we get together on Zoom and we meet in the heart space. And that's very meaningful. There's a sign up for that as well. We're not doing our candlelight service because of these crazy variants, but we will be doing the World Peace Meditation on December 31st at 6 a.m. I've been doing it since the Harmonic Convergence, which is in the early 80s. I think it was 1984. I was in Seattle, Washington that year with Trey, and it was the very first time. It's at 6 a.m. here. It's at the same time, 12 Greenwich time in England. So that would make it 7 in Atlanta, 6 here in Huntsville, and it was 4 a.m. in Seattle. So the very first Harmonic Convergence, I got up in the hotel room because the people all over the world were going to meditate for 1 hour on world peace. And I have not stopped doing it since 1984, and so I'm not going to give up that. We'll have it here. We'll do it masked. We come, we sit in silence. If people want to come up and share a prayer, that's a very meaningful thing. We do it for 1 hour. And the tradition was then I would take you all out to breakfast. And at the house, well, I'm not going to do the breakfast this year. My husband said, until the variant's gone, but he said, as soon as the variant's not there, we will do the breakfast at the house. So something to look forward to for all of us. And we're a week away from Christmas, and I had my 46th anniversary of being with my beloved husband this week. And it's kind of a festive time of year, where we get to navigate. And I know this is a tough time for a lot of people. They feel isolated and alone. But you know, the grace is to know that they're always here with you. I've been haunted by my mother. She died in the year 2000. And my sweet husband keeps weather books where he chronicles every day since 1978 when I gave him that first weather book. Every day is chronicled. Now it's become a catalog of our history together. So I said to him, honey, I said on our anniversary, I said, can you pull out September of 2000? I said, that month stands in my memory as a really traumatic month. It was the month my mother died and my teacher died, and I feel their presence. And I said, I want to know the chronology of that. And so he put the weather book down sitting by my chair this morning, and I opened it, the fragile pages, September 2000, the top of the month, September 1st, Mom has a heart attack. And I remember I was Friday or Saturday night, and I was to speak on Sunday morning. And I came here on Sunday morning, and I asked the congregation to pray because I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, you need to hold me in your heart because I have to go home and face this thing. Monday morning, we flew home. Wednesday morning, we disconnected her. And then the whole family, it was just a huge mess. It was chaos on steroids. I come back here to the center. We had just moved into the center 2 months earlier. There was chaos going on here at the center, power play among things, board members that were angry at me. Tia was on the board at the time. And reading in the weather book, so-and-so quits the board. Board meeting from hell. And I'm reading on. Then my teacher has a brain tumor, and he dies all of a sudden, less than a week after my mother. The day after that, I go up to Ascutney, Vermont, and I'm with Thich Nhat Hanh for a silent retreat. I come home. Another two people left the church angry because it was in absolute chaos here. And at the end of the month, it said, we're having a party at the center, a big dance to celebrate our Founders Day. And I thought, Trey said, boy, you sure did a lot back then that you don't do now. And I said, you know what? I survived it. And when you can look back at your life in kind of a telescopic way, you can see the grace in all that. So was that a bad time, a difficult time? It was a sacred time. Jody was reminding us she's with an old dog that they rescued, and they're hospicing him into his transition. And as she was talking about his name, Captain, tears were coming to my eyes because I was remembering the time I had with Bert at the end when he was so fragile, how sacred that time was. And so I've gotten to the place where it's not bad or good, it just is what it is. And we're here to navigate through this life the best way we know how, and to walk each other home, and to know that these are sacred times. They're times filled with grace. I'm speaking about the River of Light, drinking from the River of Light, and my little pocket roomie fell off the bookcase the other day. And it's so funny, I just opened it, and here's exactly what it said. There are no accidents. The universe is going to bring to you everything you need. This is what it opened to, the river. It said, time is limited. That's why it's so sacred. The abundant water is flowing. Drink before you fall to pieces. There is a famous conduit full of the water of life. Draw from this water so that you may become fruitful. And we are drinking the water of Kidder. Now, Kidder is a sacred symbolic figure. He's the immortal green man who appears as a guide to those who are worthy. to those who are ready. So drink from the river of this consciousness that is ready to infect you with its awareness, with its knowing, with its understanding, with its compassion. It's the Great Spirit. It's the ancestors. So he says, drink from the water of Kidder. We are drinking the water of Kidder from the river of the speech of the saints. So he says, come, thirsty one. Don't seek to be quenched. Stay thirsty. Always be drinking from this something that is offering. And so you get yourself in a place of receptivity. The universe never stopped speaking. It never stopped loving. Our job is to be in a constant flow of this awareness that's fresh by its very nature in every holy instant. That's the choice. Even if you don't see the water as skillfully as a blind person does, bring the jug of the river and dip into it. Rumi, bring the jug of the river and dip into it. So Zen calendar yesterday, Hermann Hesse, the river is everywhere. This morning on the calendar, it said, and don't try to steer the river. Now play with it. You know, Jesus said, I speak, but they do not hear. So he spoke in metaphor. And so we're using the metaphor of a river. You could use the metaphor of a web. Today I'm talking about the web of connection. You know, Indra's net in Hinduism said, this universe is like a net, and each one of us is a thread in that net. And where those nets intersect, there is a jewel. And that jewel is the soul reflecting back the same self. It's the hologram of the universe. So what if you see in this river, in this network, in this metaphor, in this ocean of love, that each one of us is a drop, and yet in that drop, the whole ocean is revealed. Now, it's a whole different way of responding then. It says in the Science of Mind, there is but one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. And that can become a chant, can be a mantra. There's only one life. So that life is everywhere revealing itself. That life is sacred. It's the life of the one that knows no other. And when they say perfect, perfect means whole. Our true nature is wholeness. To be established in that wholeness, and then to know that and to really reference that. So when everything seems to be chaotic, I love that documentary when the young man said, the monkey mind's driving me crazy. And the monk said, so hug the monkey. And the young man just stopped in his tracks. Hug the monkey. And so the simple message that this monk said to this neurotic man, and we're all a bit neurotic, anybody slightly neurotic in here besides me? Anxious times. He said to the young man, anxiety is a given. But how you respond is your choice. You can respond with fear, with reaction, with ain't it awful, or you can find that place of peace and you can look at that. And the most beautiful thing, when I studied with Thich Nhat Hanh up in Ascutney, Vermont, after my teacher and my mother had died, he literally transmitted so much awareness to me at that time. And he says, the key is to understand the nature of impermanence. Chaos comes and goes. And so when you know it's going to go, well then, you allow the chaos to activate a reordering of consciousness. Now, this beautiful young lady came for the first time here, and she'd been to a center in California. You found your way home, young lady. Jackie is her name. And it's so sacred because that's what the law of attraction is. We draw to us that which our soul longs to be. And if we could trust in the flow, and that's what the monk said to this neurotic Argentinian, if you trust in life, life will bring you everything you need in advance of your asking. And sometimes it brings you the darkness so that you can bring the light into. Sometimes it brings you a chaotic move like Susan's going through so that you can get clear and not let the outer be cause to your suffering, but in a way the outer is an opportunity to determine how you're going to respond. I'm going to respond in a proactive, loving, healing sort of way. Then you are in life, not in control, but in trust, in faith, and in a willingness to embrace what life brings you. So then when the old dog comes at the end of his life and he's suffering, you consider it an honor to hold that old dog, and you know that he's there to teach you. So many times I've had that threshold in my face. 2 years ago, Trey was reminding me, we went up to Maine to do a family reunion, and Bert had done old dog syndrome, and he wasn't getting up from his bed. This was 2 years ago, wasn't it, Al? And I didn't know what to do. I said, I knew I needed someone to stay at the house, and Al wasn't married at the time, so he agreed to stay at the house with Bert and Humphrey. I said, that means you're going to have to sleep with a pug. And he rolled his eyes, and he said, well, if I must. And then I get a text from him. He hogs the bed? I said, yeah, he does hog the bed, because it's his bed, essentially. But Jody came over to the house before we left, and she lay down on the thing, and Bert wasn't moving. And she said to him, would you please stay around for my birthday, which is January 1st? And he rallied. Somehow he managed to rally. And he was there for another year and a half. And so what if when we have these moments that we think it's the end, it really isn't the end. It's the beginning of something different. And we're all connected in this web of connection. So Mark Nepo did this beautiful in his book, Drinking from the River of Light. He said, ask the universe, what is something trying to show you? So this Sunday, I'm speaking about the web of connection. So then you ask the universe, where is this web of connection revealed to us? It's revealed from heart to heart. I remember the night that I met Tia. It was at a wedding rehearsal dinner for a lady that's no longer here at the center. And somehow or another, she and I sat there, and I knew that I'd met, in a way, a soulmate. We've never left each other's sides after that party. So you're going to attract to you what you need, whether it's a four-legged, a two-legged, whether it's a problem, which is really an opportunity for a shift in consciousness. And then you realize, I can trust this life and the connections that you make. So where am I going with this? Let's see. Okay. Barbara Rollins did a beautiful thing last Sunday. She brought me in an article. And it was about... Jody will appreciate this. I'll give it to you when you leave, Jody. It's about a neonatal ward where these babies are born. And they've discovered that the babies need to be held. They need physical contact in order for them to really thrive. When Elizabeth Kubler-Ross came to the Atlanta church in the early 80s, she was working with the AIDS babies. Marcia will appreciate this. And they found that on the wards where they had babies with AIDS, if people would come and hold the babies with AIDS, they would literally go into remission. There's something about being held, being loved. And so they had this place, this list, and the list was called Baby Saver Sign-Up Sheet. And people would sign up, and they would go in, and they'd hold these babies, and they were having miraculous results with the kids thriving. So in this lovely article, she tells the story of a man named Clyde. And Clyde's wife died. He almost died with her. He was a big black man in a church, and she was singing in the choir. And they were like two peas in a pod, maybe been married like 50 years, like Trey and myself. And they were so connected, and when she passes, he became a mess. He couldn't handle it. This is what it says. The poor man was a wreck. He was stuck inside his house for almost a year. He lost his job, he lost his gumption, and he became famously depressed for a year. He sat in that place until this woman put him on the list to sit with the babies. So this is what happens to Clyde. My aunt added Clyde's name to the baby saver sign-up sheet. So this 6'9" man with shoulders wider than a Buick Roadmaster, he walked into the NICU and lifted up a premature baby in his Herculean hand. Imagine this big hand in this tiny baby. Clyde sat in a rocking chair, and he cradled one infant after another until the night nurse had to send him home. He was back the next morning, even though he wasn't on the schedule, and he hugged baby after baby again, day after day. My aunt says one afternoon, Clyde started to grieve. He'd held his grief in, Finn. Clyde started to grieve. He started crying when he was holding one of the preemies. He started heaving. He started quivering so badly. They had to take the baby out of his arms. Then, talk about the connection. Then all the little old ladies, volunteers, started surrounding Clyde, and they group hugged him until they practically smothered him. My aunt said that she had never seen a grown man cry that hard before. She also said that hugging the babies is what eventually brought the old man back to life. Getting tears here. Years later, she saw him at a grocery store, and he was a changed individual, all by the simple act of extending love to someone who was less. So with that realization, Zen Calendar said last Sunday, God realization is nothing but the ability and the expansiveness of the heart to love everything equally. God realization is nothing but the capacity to love everything equally. And so Susan walked up to me and she had a bug that she found on the floor. She said, he's the same bug that was here last week. So in a little tissue, we carried the bug outside. Is that where you carried him? Oh, he was already dead. Well, there is no death. There is no death. Yeah, so we come here to make that connection to that ineffable something, and then to drink from that river of life, that river of trust, that river of peace, that river of possibility. Beloved Angkor is going to South America, and he's heading out on a journey, and he's not allowed to know the end of that journey, and that's the beauty of it. So could we embrace uncertainty? Because most of the world wants certainty. We want to have it all figured out. We want to know that we're safe and that everything's predictable, but we're living at a time when things are unpredictable. So could we, in a strange sort of way, accept that as the new norm? This is going to be the new norm for quite a while, y'all. And I'm at peace with that. Are you at peace with it? I mean, we could react. We could stomp our feet. Our children are suffering. You know, Emily knows that. You know, my husband was a school teacher. It nearly drove him crazy. The first year, I thought he was going to become an alcoholic. He came home every day, just a mess. But then he learned to find his inner peace, and he would get up in the morning, and he would connect to that peaceful, loving place. He would meditate, and he would go in there. And so when the opportunity to react was there, I watched him literally respond, just like Clyde, embracing those kids, oftentimes in dysfunctional families, who just needed that still point, that reference point where they could find port in the storm. And so I realized that that was his ministry. His job was to teach, but his work was to be an ambassador of love, to love them all equally. And I know you feel that same way, Emily. It's not just to teach them something. I'm not here to teach you anything, by the way. I'm here to love you and to love the wholeness within you and to call it forth, just like I call the wholeness within myself. Marie Perez found a lovely little book called When God Winks at You. Well, I'm telling you, God's always winking at you. It's winking at you from the birds and the trees. We were walking the pug and the buggy the other day, and it bit a lot of rain in Huntsville. And in the middle of the road, there were all these worms that had sought refuge from the drenched soil. And so Trey put the buggy aside, and he's running around the street picking up these worms. And he says, it's hard to pick them up because they wiggle and they don't want to come with you. And he's picking up worm after worm after worm and taking them to the side of the road. Now, did he do that for the worms or did he do that for himself? Maybe he just recognized that we're all connected. And if you see it somewhere outside of you and it's calling to your heart, well, then the wise thing is to listen to the wisdom of the heart. The heart will show you oneness. Beloved Emily did one of those practices where you can put the positive things that you want to manifest in the world and create a little ritual out of it. What's so great about anything like that is that we're connected to the thoughts that we think and the feelings that we have. And when you choose positive thoughts, in fact, it says in the Bible, whatsoever things are lovely and of good report, think on these things. So when we start planting seeds of hope, and by the way, Jean, my Sunday next week is all on hope. Yes, hope springs eternal. So could we find this thing that would give us hope? Even doing that little ritual for Emily, I want to have harmony within my heart so I can see harmony in the world. You know, what you sow is what you're going to reap. So if you sow lovely thoughts, you're going to see a lovely experience. A young man who was 20 years old, Angkor, he was one of my first teachers. He just disappeared. He went off in a mountain and he never showed, but he left this one little gift. Was a thing he wrote, and it was passed to me. And he said, a happy person will see beauty in the same place that an unhappy person sees ugliness. And then he said, I am beautiful. You are beautiful. The whole existing universe is beautiful. Ugliness is a manifestation of unhappiness. So in that simple little phrase, his name was Sun, he awoke me to the power of how we perceive things. If I can find the beauty within, I'm going to see the beauty without. If I find the connection to this love that has never abandoned or left us, well, then I realize when someone leaves in form, they don't leave in essence. And what we are is essence. We're spiritual beings. We're having a human experience. In the human experience, things can be crazy because we have attachments, we have revulsions, we have preferences, and we suffer because of those. In that lovely month of September in 2000, I realize that people come into our lives to go out of our lives, and sometimes they bless us when they leave, truly. and they create space for something new to enter into that space, and that our hearts are going to be broken, and we're going to have those moments where we think we can't go on, but that's when you have a spiritual community. I remember how much Tia helped me at that time when we had the board from hell, and I didn't know what I was going to do. Both my teacher and mother had died. She took over the reins. She ran the show, and she held me in her embrace because I was a mess. I was like Clyde, and this community has always been that embracing force for me when I was at those fragile moments in our life. So what if there's a message there? There is this web of connection that is so sacred, and we get to be a part of it. You know what I love about a theme for the month? I get to go deeper. The first week I talked about the life of expression and how this life longs to express. The soul wants to express. The ego wants to impress. So if you're allowing your expression, then you'll start painting again. The expression, it was Mark Nepo that wrote this beautiful poem called The Thread, and he says there is this ineffable thread that's woven throughout creation. Everything changes, but that thread doesn't. So could we find out what that eternal thread is that wants to paint through a Tia or dance through a David or bake cookies through a Jean Anne? This thread of love, this thread of creativity, and honor it as our true nature. That's that life of expression. It's always expressing. Look at nature. It's always expressing in diversity. You know, one of the greatest hallmarks of oneness is diversity. I have a garden with a gazillion plants, and now all the camellias, I counted them, I have 13 camellias, and they're all blooming their heads off. The white camellias, the pink camellias, the variegated camellias, and they're all saying, look at me expressing. And so I find myself picking up blossoms and giving them to strange people in the streets because it wants to be shared. It's a life of expression. Last week, I looked at what it means to see. What it means to see. Are you looking through the eyes of expectation and seeing what you want to see? Or are you looking and seeing what is and seeing that it's not a bad thing? I have a hard time when people say I had a bad day or a good day. It's just a day. And when it becomes a day, then the things that seem maybe not so good can be really sacred. Like Jody tending this old dog, Captain, at the end of his life. That's not a bad thing. That's a sacred thing. And so we begin to see differently. How are you looking at things? When you change the way you look at things, says the poster, the things you look at change. So what if, just what if, I heard Father Thomas Keating, he says, what if we were told from the time we were a tiny child, and you can think of this with your students, Emily, that child is told from the teeniest time that God lives within you, that this perfect life lives within you, that the peace that passes all understanding is the truth of what you are, that you are a divine gift to the universe. You are the way the universe expresses and sees and reveals its beauty. Can you imagine how that child would be different? Charlotte and I were talking about the programming we were raised with. I was told as a young gay boy that I was an abomination in God's eyes. That's a heavy weight to carry when you're a little boy. And then I had to learn to say, you know, they lied to me, and then find out the truth, that God doesn't condemn, but this God is an all-embracing, loving presence. And when you begin to see that way, to see with new eyes, you're part of the reordering on planet Earth. I really know that what's going to save us as a species is when we consciously evolve into a recognition that we're not separate from anything. You heard me speak about Pachamama Alliance and how the indigenous people have known the sacredness of this planet, that they're all our relations. I'm still blown away by fungus after watching that Netflix thing. Is it the fabulous fungus or the fantastic fungus?
Fantastic.
But to realize that there's this web, they called it the world wide wood web. Underneath, in the mycelium and in the root systems, there's this intelligence that's supporting everything else. So we're surrounded in this, we're being held in this loving planet. She's not a commodity to be developed and usurped, but she's a sacred space to be treasured and valued. I shared with those in the revealing service, Trey and I, on our anniversary, we went out to Wheeler Wildlife Refuge. We have a tradition, and we go out there on our anniversary, and we take the pug, and we wheeled it around, and the sandhill cranes were there. It seemed like thousands of them. And they were honking their horns, and then they would lift up in unison, and then they'd fly to another place. It was mesmerizing, and you were witnessing this sacred space. And amongst them were a few of the big white ones, and I think they're called the hooping cranes. Yeah, the hooping cranes. They were the big white ones amidst the sandhills. And And then there's a little app. If you don't have it, it's called Merlin. And Merlin, you can put it on, and it tapes all the sounds of the birds. So because of all the birds, we put on Merlin, and we were with the swans, the traveling great swans. And I mean, the list went on and on. We thought, oh my God, all the birds that are out here at Wheeler Wildlife Refuge, so that we can bow to this. How sacred is that? Right in our own backyard. As long as the human species learns to revere it. Of course, my husband, in his dry sense of humor, said, so when do they have hunting season on the cranes? I said, don't go there with me. Don't go there with me. You know how sensitive I am. And Jody assured me, there is no hunting of the cranes. They're protected. So it's good to know, because we're connected. So I'm going to do a little treatment for that connection, if my brother Terry will go to the mindfulness bell. And for whom the bell tolls, Ernest Hemingway said, the bell tolls for thee. Every time I hear that bell, I'm back in Ascutney, Vermont, September of 2000, at the Thich Nhat Hanh retreat, and they would ring the bell throughout the day. And when the bell would ring, you would stop, literally in your tracks, and you would take three deep breaths. And you would turn within, and you would witness what is arising within. At that particular time, 20 years ago, 21 years ago, I would see my mother in every flower. I would hear my teacher's voice in my head, and it's as if they had never left. And so at that sacred mindfulness moment, I came to realize that who we are does not die. This presence is always there. And when we begin to identify that, we can expand into a connection that is timeless and eternal, a connection that will never leave. And we are in that web of connection. It was Thich Nhat Hanh that said, the ancestors live in you. And so whatever the ancestors might be, we could call the trees our ancestors. Our four-legged children, our ancestors, the ones that have transitioned. Our physical parents and grandparents, our beloved ones that we've been so close to, they're still with us. And so as we begin to see with fresh eyes, drinking from this river of life, not trying to steer the river, but allowing the river to take us on an ever-unfolding journey of discovery, well, then we stand in awe. Wheresoe'er I look, I see the face of God winking at me, as Marie would say. All there is this presence, everywhere revealing herself. And we witness it in the Quran. When you remember him, he remembers you. When you remember this divine love fills you. When you remember that we are beings of light, well, then you begin to see the light everywhere revealing itself. When you remember that spirit was never born and never dies, well, then you realize that this love that we've shared is as vital and as real as it ever was. We meet in that field. We meet in that field. Rumi says it's out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking. And when our soul lies down in that field, words are not necessary. They often get in the way. Even the idea each other does not exist. And so he says, let us meet there, in that field of the one. Jesus called it the kingdom of heaven. That's spread out upon the earth, but we don't see it because we're so caught up in our beliefs and our ideas. And ideas aren't really real. They're concepts that the mind creates for us to share and contagion the world with. But when belief and idea and concept fall away, what is there? There is awake awareness. And we meet in that awake awareness, in that web of consciousness. We meet in the universal mind, not in the local mind. So what would the universal, the mind of the universe, know? What is the mind of the universe seeking to reveal through us, to us, as us? And then we listen, we lowly listen. I hear that beautiful chant that says, "Be still and know that I am God." So in the silence, we find peace. In the silence, we find unspoken joy. In the silence, there's release from a world filled with chaos. And then we hope. We hope for the expansion of divine love on planet Earth, where we begin to see everything is sacred. And it starts with you, and it starts with me. It starts with the Namaste consciousness. The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you. And we begin to see the beloved in the worms that come up and squiggle in the street. We see the beloved in the beautiful mushrooms that move through the dead wood, reclaiming it. And then even the mushrooms become sacred to you. Feel that connection that never goes away. Feel that river of life within and without. The river of love that flows within, the river of life that flows without. It was Hugh Prather who wrote a little book called Notes to Myself. And he says one of the most profound things he learned when he was a little boy, when he heard the song, "Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream." And he says there's four merrilies to three rows, so it's supposed to be fun. And he said you're here to row your boat, not somebody else's boat. And he says go down the stream, not up the stream. And he says, be joyful, because this is a dream. And so when you see the dream on the outside for what it is, then you turn to the reality on the inside, and you realize that we're creating our own dream by what we choose to identify with. And when your dream begins to change, well, then you can smile. Life is giving us everything in advance of our asking. And then we say to life, "I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are the life of the universe unveiling herself in me right now. I drink from the river of light. I drink from the river of peace. I drink from the river of love. And I get drunk. And I am overjoyed to be one with all it is. And finally recognize it. All is the one. Revealing herself. Uniquely. Beautifully, and abundantly. And so it is. Thank you, guys. Mask time. Oh, thank you.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.